It's my privilege once again at this time to introduce once again Brother Levi Jacobs, who had the opening discourse of the convention, and glad to have Brother Levi back again, and we'll let Brother Levi announce his own subject.
Wise on Brother Fettermeyer's part to allow me to announce my own subject because I hadn't made up one yet. And very propitiously, we thank the Lord that for his guidance and he leadeth me. We appreciate that. We have experiences in which we require his leadings. And I was interested that the testimonies had touched off that keynote, how he does it. One step, sometimes, is all we see ahead of us. And I presume that's a designed method that the Lord uses in order to develop, as well as crystallize, our faith. And I've been going through that very deeply. A few have heard about the experience, making certain transfers in my affairs with the intent of being more available for service without hindrance, even though we were devoted to that particular career for some years already, we've been trying to get an efficiency background situation on it. We did have to turn down a couple of invitations during the winter because of our home circumstance, so we may find that that may be an advantage. But in any case, the point is, it seems that the Lord may have led us in that direction. We didn't pray to that effect. We did bring it to his attention. That's as far as we went. We didn't tell him or even ask him how to do it. And it seems to be working out to that end. But it's been one step at a time. It's been happened to be in conjunction with this convention, and we thought it might weigh on our hearts a little bit, and it started to, and then the Lord just began to lift one burden or problem or perplexity out of the way at a time. It got to the point where we just didn't have to be thinking about it anymore. We just had to follow where he led, and that's why we're very appreciative of all the prayers and testimonies and keynotes. But it's interesting that the brother, our brother Brazilius, is that it, in his prayer, spoke about the anointing of the lips, because it's been my meditation in preparation for these messages as to how is one going to be adequately enabled to adequately cope with the magnitude of the messages that bear upon one's heart in such momentous times of crisis as these are. Because, as you know, we are very, very animated by the events transpiring, the outlook, the perspective, and the dimensions that are being brought to bear. So words are not adequate. But I said to myself, well, the Lord's just going to have to do something about that. And so we were interrupted. I got lost and didn't think about the time. And so we were interrupted in this particular consideration, which is, we'll go back. Our theme is wind versus whirlwind. Now I can give it to you. But we were belaboring certain views here because this is quite a subject. It's going to be on Revelation 7, holding back the four winds. Everybody's been interested in that. But we got over to Daniel, and in the 10th chapter, and we were discussing, of course, as you know, Daniel was one of those prominent prophet personalities in the Old Testament. Stands on the top list. If Daniel, Job, and another prophet is mentioned were in a city, that would be the only potential salvation of saving it from destruction. But in certain cases, the destruction had gone so far that they would only save themselves. So you still get the idea both ways of the the inexorability of divine justice and judgment, and yet the high potential of intervention as a possibility by the righteous man. The prayers of a righteous man availeth much. The brethren need prayers. I've heard that mentioned time and again. And I may get a chance to mention it slightly again, but I said I won't take the testimony time now because others may need it. But that's one of the reasons for telling you about the sounding of the trumpet and the alarm on the Joel's picture, is because we need, there's a solemnity about this situation. This is not just a matter of the fact that the events are dynamic, but there's a solemnity that underlines them, because life and death are the issues at stake. You had a text not long ago, I believe, I may have mentioned that. Prepare to meet thy God. Are you ready? Well, some were honest as well as humble enough to admit, no, I'm not. And we would not take it hard with any group that would find that there were a number that would have to say that. But you better start thinking about it. It's the best I can tell you. Prepare to meet thy God. So that's why I say the issues at stake are life and death. Brother gave a good talk on the theme, natures, separate and extinct. Right. This is the time for extinction. So it's, as I say, one can hardly find words adequate to convey these meditations and concepts were it not for the Lord's helping. So the brother mentioned in his talk, we appreciated those prayers, the anointing of the lips. And here's what we were in when the brother knocked on our door. In the 10th chapter of Daniel, the 12th verse. Let's see here if we can find it momentarily. Yes. Then he said unto me, fear not, Daniel, for from the first day that thou didst set thine heart to understand and to chasten thyself before thy God, thy words were heard, and I am come for thy words. That's what prayer does. Sets up a communication sensitivity, plus the chastening and the posture of humility and waiting with intent listening to receive a message. Now, this is the attitude that all in the Elijah class should be. The fact that you see things is one thing, but after it was all over, after he had seen the wind, earthquake, and fire, he wrapped his face in a mantle. This is another aspect of importance in our posture. That was awe. Can you visualize? People do. We had it up in Connecticut the other day. Those of you who keep track of our news realize, heard about it. We had a tornado up there. We told you all things happen in the east. And we had a tornado up there, and it hit all of a sudden. Gave you that new word, unexpectedly. We hadn't had things on that magnitude for some time. And when it got through, the damage that was done, it only took about a few minutes. Whoever's up, nobody here from the east but me. Took a few minutes, but the damage was disastrous as well as calamitous. And in the United Nations drive that we had in our plant and our organization, we have a big organization, over 1,000 employees, 3 buildings, 2 of them brand new. So they expect to get a high level of contributions through the United Way Fund. I contribute to it. I've been always interested in contributing to those who may be in need. I used to work for a handicap company, Goodwill. I was considered it a privilege to use my strength for the benefit of others who were less strong. And it was quite an experience to be in association with people who were handicapped. They hired them in our plant, and now you see all the nation, all the communities are aware of handicaps. They revamped the curbs so that you can get up with wheelchairs. They got the buses changed so that you can lift them up. You got them in the airport so that you can carry them on. Yes, well, that's a good thing about this nation, that they are aware of these things, the handicapped, the underprivileged, the poor, and the needy. So we work with them, those who don't hear well, those who don't see good, those who stutter, those who have, who tremble, and all the different types of handicap illnesses. We have had some contact in them. We used to take buses to the hospital where they were. And you see these little children, they haven't even got a start in life, and they can hardly talk, and they have to have patience and loving tender care to deal with these people. All you mothers know something about dealing with these type of children and people. So we were glad to have had that opportunity in our lifetime to have contributed our competence in the area of health and strength to that cause. So, as I said, the United Way, we have contributed. But my point was, they always have a movie to illustrate the background of the work. But there was a personal exposition there by a man who was involved in that Windsor tornado. Incidentally, we have a record of the events that have been happening. And those of you who may be interested, we have a few enough here that you may take some if you're able to Xerox them for the benefit of your class or others, and you may get copies. We have a book back there on the latest categories of events that we keep books on. Some of you are familiar with it. You may look at it. We have earthquakes in there, tornadoes, switches, everything. Take a look at it. If you would like to have it for your class benefit, talk to Brother Craig, and he'll see that you get it. We have one that he has now is returning to us. If you want the old one, you can get that. We have Tremendous Earthquake, which we have copies of that we shared with the brethren at Piqua. We have enough left so that if you're interested, you can get a copy of this. So anyhow, so you see, we've got that tornado down on our list. But he was there. This is to make a long story short. And he testified. That's what you have, testimony. He testified. You didn't know the world could testify, did you? Oh, you should hear them. He gave his testimony. He's a man and he worked for our plan. I didn't even know that. And he gave his testimony. He said, beloved, he didn't say beloved, he said, talk to the army, he said, you know, friends. He said, what you see me with is all I had left from that tornado. I was wiped out. House, car, possessions, clothes, everything. The Red Cross and the UN got together and they gave me the shoes, and he showed them. They were good shoes that I'm wearing. And that was a literal demonstration of the effects that people go through when they get into these storms. So these storms are not merely mentioned to you because they have news interest, but they're mentioned because they affect the destiny of humanity, of humans. And as high priests, sympathetic high priests, we're interested in these things. So, as I say, that's wind. What I'm trying to tell you. That's wind. You're in winds now. Winds are having their day, doing their thing, as the world would say. And they can do something, too. Take them trailers. You know what the trailers are. Tell them about it, Brother Roy, how heavy they are when they're loaded. They take them trailers and turn them around and pick them up and send them somewhere. Trains the same way. That's the strength of those winds. Beloved, instead of. All right, now, so we were in Daniel, as we say, and we're interested in this particular way in which he presents it. He said that, but the prince, see, because I was talking about prayer and what it sensitizes the communication to hear the word of the Lord. Now, I didn't finish. About Daniel, Elijah, I said, covers his face with a mantle. That's what I was getting at. That the power of the elements under the control or under the display of energy from whatever source it comes is frightening. Even when the disciples were with Jesus on the boat and the storm came up on the sea, the winds. That's why winds is the last feature of trouble. They were frightened. And Peter made an effort to asked him, is it all right? There's two separate interests I'm talking about. They were on the boat. Jesus was asleep. It didn't bother him. I wouldn't advise you to do that, to go to sleep. I don't know if you have that faith and could get by that easy. But he was asleep, and they woke him up. But oh, what fateful words they pronounced. My sheep, hear them. Carest thou not that we perish? Aren't you interested in the fact that we're so near to death? He was asleep. And what did he say? He woke up calmly, straightened out his robe, looked over the situation, then turned to them. Oh, thou of little faith, wherefore didst thou doubt? I'm with you all the time. Don't worry about sleep. My Father doesn't sleep. And I and my Father are one. Have the same mind. But the other time was when Peter was going to walk on the waves. That was good. Give him credit. The waves were high and boisterous. They can make them Titanic ships shake like a leaf and wind. And he essayed to make the effort, and as he walked, took his eyes off the master and looked at the waves and the waters. And when he did, he went and started to sink. He hollered, Lord, I sink, or I save me, or I sink. The Lord stretched out his hand. Hold us by the hand. Did you sing it? Lead us by thy hand. And he did. So it was wonderful. His faith was strengthened. He was saved. But the Lord permitted him to learn a lesson. Keep our eyes on Jesus. So as I say, that's what prayer does. So many of us are going through a boisterous time of stormy weather. Stormy weather. Nobody else may know it but those near and intimate to us. I've been impressed with the communication that I'm getting from the brethren. There's a sister that some of you may know out in California. I've got news from other parts of California. The other brethren that are here can tell you about that. In one case, it was a case of a sister we know very well, had a stroke. He's been in the hospital. There's another brother out there that's been in the hospital. I knew him when he was well and healthy. He's been in the hospital. They made a misoperation on him for some reason. He's been there. But there's another sister recently, I'll mention her name, she and her husband, Bradbury. Thank you all know her. And it's been my privilege to see them. And when they come to meeting, both of them are handicapped. But this time the husband is in a rather critical shape and has heart conditions or blood clot obstructions. The sister herself is handicapped and so forth. So, and I could go on and on and on. There are other sisters in that area that have to go to meetings and they have to not be able to sit up. We had it brought to our attention. Some can't sit for long. Others can't even lie down for long, but they come to the meetings. Mark, bless their hearts. But what I'm getting at is these prayers are needed on behalf of all the saints, whether you know them or not. I don't pretend to know them all. It has been my lot to be in contact with a few, but as I suggest to you all, prayer now takes on a new impetus and necessity on behalf of all saints. Thy prayers were heard, Daniel. That's what it says here, beloved. Now, another thing that I suggest is those of you who have communication, you may not be able to get in contact as often as you wish, but use the phone once in a while if you have to. I'm not advertising for the phone company. They don't need it. But they do tell you, reach out. Is that what they advertise? Anybody here work with the phone company? Reach out, call it. To get in touch with someone when you have to hear from them, you want to know something about them. And we've tried that, not because we wanted to try, but because we thought that was the only alternative to letting the brethren know that they're on our prayers, not on our minds. That's always true, but they're on our prayers. And so prepare for these methods of instant communication. Set up your hotlines because the brethren will appreciate the communication reminders. But I was in prayer that Daniel was in when this angel now comes to his rescue. Now hear what he says. But the prince of the kingdom of Persia withstood me 120 days. But lo, Michael, one of the chief princes, came to help me, and I remained there with the kings of Persia. Now that was an insight, it's a graphic insight to the behind-the-scenes operation of these spiritual beings in the element of the heavens. So this is what I was talking about, but that wasn't the point I'm coming to. The point I'm coming to is where, in response to his prayer, let's see here, I had it a while ago. 16th verse. And behold, one like, this is 16th verse, one like the similitude of the sons of men. Are you with me? Who's got it? What's the next verses? Touched my lips. That's interesting. Then I opened my mouth and spoke and said unto him that stood before me, O my Lord, by the vision my sorrows are turned upon me and I have retained no strength. Don't think that because you see things pertaining to the Lord's inner work, pertaining to the inner workings of God's plan, that it's always going to bring you joy, elation, ecstasy. No. Sometimes it brings you sorrow. The prophets of Israel, when they had to visualize and saw what was coming to their people, inevitably, as we looked and see what the world must go through, as the brother mentioned already from the platform, told you that it's frightening in its way. We discussed all the nuclear possibilities right at the home with Sister Pettimore. She's here somewhere. And so we were right on time. They've been discussing it ever since. See? And this thing is a fearful and frightening outlook. See? And it makes you, you know, sometimes tremble a little bit. So it was with Daniel. When he saw, he said, my spirit turned on me, and I was faint, didn't have any appetite. So seeing the Lord's mind on all these matters doesn't always bring you joy and rejoicing, but it puts you in contact and the relation to the operations of the divine purposes and makes you a part of them. I'm sure when then he didn't realize that he was writing concerning the destiny, that Messiah that he wrote about, that in the midst of the week he should be cut off. Oh, little did he know what that Messiah would go through in the process of being cut off. So this is, as I say, all of these things draw our sympathy because the divine purposes require us to understand the principles behind which he operates. So this is where I was interrupted, and as I say, the prayer propitiously brought in the touching of the lips. Isaiah had colds from fire by the angel to touch his lips before he was qualified. Ezekiel had coals of fire touch his lips before he was qualified to speak. So I don't pretend to be qualified to give you a message in my own competency. Only if the Lord has a message for you can I comply with the demands of the occasions. All right, now we go to Revelation. I understand there's a lot of interest in Revelation, and as I say times many times before, it is justified more than you realize. Revelation 7:1. And we're going to go backwards and forwards. That's the way Ezekiel's wheels turn. Backwards and forwards. Ezekiel 7:1 says, and after these things I saw four angels standing on the four corners of the earth, holding the four winds of the earth. So this is the key to your climax of the time of trouble. Winds. That's why you're getting all the literal, as we have told you, are the portenders of the symbolic, which is on a greater dimensional scale, of course. Winds. Whether in the spiritual, winds of false doctrines, errors, deception, in the literal storms, or in the symbolical, the turning around of governments, of the ships, of the churches, the ships on the ocean. Winds is the key. But in this particular situation, he says, the winds were held back. And let's read it carefully. By the angel standing on the four corners, that the wind, that singular, should not blow on the earth, nor on the sea, nor on the trees. And I saw another angel ascending from the east, told you about the east, having the seal of the living God, and cried with a loud voice to the four angels to whom it was given to hurt the earth and the sea, saying, hurt not the earth, neither the sea, nor the trees, till we have sealed the servants of our God in their foreheads. So now you see the destiny of the saints is inextricably wrapped up in the events of the closing events of this age. Now, we go back to the beginning. After these things, I saw this. So in order to get the full concept of the finality of what this seventh chapter is presenting to us. You got to go backwards to the after these things. What's he talking about? Well, he's talking about the sixth seal. So we go back to the sixth seal. 6:12. And I beheld, and when he had opened the sixth seal, and lo, what's it in your Bible? What happened? You got it. How could you ignore it? You say, Brother Jacob, you've been talking too much about earthquake. That's all we hear you talk about. Well, that's all you're going to hear for a while, unless you want to feel it. If you talk about it enough, you may escape it. They're trying to find a way to predict it. California, they expect a big one. I hope and pray that as long as the brethren are there, it won't happen. Not where they are anyhow. I'll almost guarantee that. But I'm sure they felt it. Oh yeah, the Lord permits that. They felt it. The brethren have been in earthquakes. I've heard them from all over the place. They were in one in Hezekiah's tunnel. Happened when they were there. A whole bunch of them were there. Where's Brother David? Tell us so. Is that right?
True.
All right, you heard it. Brother Hamlin, a whole bunch of them were there going through Hezekiah's tunnel, and they brought the report back to me. And the earth trembled. That's significant. That's for us and for the brethren at large. Because the last one will be the one like in the days of Uzziah. See? So you're going to see that that's why earthquake is the language of the Lord. All right, so there was a low, there was a great earthquake. And there was a great, and the sun became black as sackcloth, as hair, the moon became as blood. The stars of heaven fell unto the earth, even as a fig tree casteth her untimely figs when she is shaken of a mighty wind. Now this came to me as we studied it. Wind. What's the fig tree?
Israel.
Israel. You didn't think about that when you read it. Why is he comparing these heavenly rolling of the scroll that you've been had? That's why you've got Revelation, to get your minds functionally coordinated on these matters. The heavens are coming together, yes. There may be ecumenicism, whatever you want to call it. Ain't going to do them any good anyhow. But this idea of ecumenical conference, they have that all the time, every 10 years. That's nothing new. So don't let that excite you. Federationism, that's nothing new. Every time they get into trouble, they get together. Because this time it's for their being blown away. The reason it's compared to Israel is because Israel, the fig tree, it says, was getting ready to be blown away. Untimely figs. They were green and they were getting ready for judgment. Jesus is the one that said concerning Israel at the time of his crucifixion, if they do these things in the green tree, what shall it be in the dry? Now you turn to your comment book. I wouldn't have time to read all these, and we have to move along. But on page 461 of your comment book, and you read the comment on that, and you'll find all the references that you need. I'm just going to brush along here. So then, this is what he means when he says, he compares it to the fig tree that casteth her untimely figs. They were about ready to be cast off. See, that was the time. When she's shaken of a mighty wind. What greater wind shook Israel than the calamities of AD 70? So that's what's heading for the new heavens and the new earth. Now I'll give you this briefly. The next set, which is very interesting. This is under the sixth seal. Each seal goes right on, not each one, but some of the seals go right on down to the end. So don't think that they stop and you get a sequence. No. They project. All right, the sixth seal goes right, takes right on down to the end. So they overlap. That's characteristic of God's plans. The heavens, let me give you the four kings, but the heavens departed as a scroll when it is rolled together. Every mountain and island were moved out of their places. So it takes you right down to the end. That's your seventh plague in Revelation 16. The seventh plague, which is the great earthquake that we told you about. And that's what this is about, this tremendous earthquake. And every island, the city of the nations was divided into three parts. Every island was moved out of its place. The mountains were removed, and they weren't found anymore. So see, the sixth seal takes you to that same extension of time. Now, the kings of the earth, in anticipation of this progressive situation, the kings of the earth, the great men, the rich men, the chief captains, mighty men, bondmen, free men, hid themselves in the dens and in the rocks of the mountains, and said to the mountains and rocks, "Fall on us, hide us from the face of him that sitteth on the throne and from the wrath of the Lamb. For the great day of his wrath is come. Who shall be able to stand?" Oh, but then you're in that. Malachi includes us. "Behold, the messenger of the covenant whom ye seek shall suddenly come to his temple. But who shall abide the day of his coming? And who shall stand when he appears?" Why? Because he is as refined as fire and as full as soap to purify the sons of Levi. So your trial runs in concentric with the judgments of the world, but the judgments begin with the house of God. But that's not against you, that's to purify the church, because they have a tremendous responsibility with respect to the whole area. Elijah's message determines the outcome of judgment for the world. If his message were received, he would turn the hearts of the fathers to the children, am I right? And vice versa. But if it's rejected, the curse comes. So Elijah has to be purified to the ultimate, lowest, common denominator. Did I say that right?
That's right.
All who don't measure up to the standards of Elijah's classification have to be in one way or another manifested or separated. And purified at the same time. So this is what this test is about. So the church is going through her church. So you see, this is why I say it's an alarming situation to get the insight into. All right, now we go back to the updating to show you why this is so appropriate at this time. The kings of the earth said to Satan, "Mount's rocks fall on us." What's the latest manifestation of that? What's the Shah doing? He's asking for a mountain to cover him. He went to Mexico, but that wasn't big enough. That's only a hill. Couldn't cover him. Not with his billions of dollars. He had to go to a mountain. Biggest one that's on the globe right now. And he asked coverage, protection. That's what it means. He's not asking for it to commit suicide. He's asking for coverage, to fall on us, cover us, protect us, and hide us. That's what he wants. See, and you can multiply it all down the line. All of them are doing it in one way or another. Some can't go to mountains. They go to the dens and the rocks, the smaller institutions, the unions, the insurance stability. Everybody's got to get coverage in some way. I even have a little coverage of my own. Good thing I got it. Hospital coverage. You need it, you know. But I'm not asking it for it to protect me from the wrath of the Lord. I'm just asking it to take up the slack when I need it, you see. But with the Shah, he wants the mountain to cover him. Really does. And he's got a big thing going here with all the world. They don't know what the outcome's going to be. I'm just showing you how prophecy is fulfilling itself. And he needs protection because it's the wrath of God that he's facing, because the judgments of the Lord are abroad in the earth. All right, now one more point there, and then we must go on. We got much ground to cover. And that is that this is earthquake territory. I told you, we got a list here. I didn't even take time to count them. But you will, when you ask for them, if you get a chance, you let me know. And I'll see that you get a copy. But we found out as we were checking the list of events after this tornado in Connecticut. Incidentally, our mayor, Mayor Grasso, her home is 1 mile from where the tornado took place. So you see, nobody is exempt. So she was very sensitive. That's how the Lord does. She was very sensitive to the distress of the peoples. She did a lot to help them. They had to bring in loads of lumber and heavy trucks, and they had to volunteer to reconstruct the things that were lost and destroyed, and to give them help and food and clothes and everything else. So she was very much sensitized to that situation. So we, as I say, throughout this period of time, we just got a lot of calamities going. We got a list of them. You can look at them if you want. Then we found that earthquakes were happening, so that's our special area. So from October 15th, we got earthquakes. Takes in the California one, where we had special insight on that. October 23rd, 26th, 27th, 28th, 29th, November 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th, every day we had earthquakes. So we had to retype the whole thing until we got the whole thing together. So you've got about 12 or more, 15 earthquakes on one piece. So we knew this. Then what happened? Iran happened. What do you think? That's what it was. It was a harbinger of what was going on. And then Iran happened. Oh, not the literal one. You didn't get the literal one first. You got the symbolic one. Biggest earthquake you ever saw, symbolically speaking. You shook this nation up and still is shook up. They haven't resolved it yet. Got Camp David to call all the chiefs of state, all the governors, all the heads of the nation to see what they got to do next. If that didn't shake up this nation, what do you need to do it? Mighty earthquake from a small nation. And it's not over yet. Then they had the real earthquake. I got that here somewhere, too. See if I can find it for you. But as we say, we got it all here together, if you want to look at it, and then you'll see why this thing is so impressive. So anyhow, here it is. We got it. 500 perished in devastating Iran earthquake. Iran's survival test for Carter. See? That's not a coincidence. So this is what we have been documenting, was in harmony with what was about to happen. And there you got it. Had on a double scale, double feature scale. We, in fact, we got earthquakes that happened 2 and 3 and 4 at a time, quadruples. All right, so there you got it. All right, now, this is what Revelation is bringing to our attention. That's only the sixth seal. All right, now we come back to the seventh chapter. Oh, yes, I meant to tell you about the revolution. See, the symbolic definition of earthquake is revolutions. And I was struck when I heard what the Shah's, or not Shah, Ayatollah Khomeini said, when he said he's holding up them hostages. Anybody remember what he said he's going to hold them up for? What he's going to do to them? What kind of trial?
Spy trial.
Revolutionary. That's right. But that's the overall cover. He called it, a revolutionary trial. That's earthquake. I mean, that's your earthquake. That's what's got all the trouble. That's a mighty earthquake in terms of the biblical symbology. A revolutionary trial. They're going to revolution. You didn't help them. That's what he's saying. This country didn't help them. They were on the other side of that confrontation. So this is a revolutionary trial. See, everybody that was against them, they're going to fix them, as they say. But the revolutionary word is indicating what the scriptures have predicted. That's my point. All right, now, spy trial is right, brother, but there'll be more things than that. The Shah wasn't a spy. He was just an obstacle, period. All right, so now we go back to Revelation 7. The four winds are being held back in conjunction with the ceiling. But now, I've always said, and many of you may remember, would say, well, we've heard you speak about this matter. You always said that they were loosed. All right, what do I mean? It says, hold back the four winds that the wind should not blow. Singular. So this brings you back to your key pivotal point of historical changes in the final outcome of the present civilization, which is the time when the image was smitten on its feet, 1914. That's when everything happened. It's pre-1914 and post-1914. So it fits that the beginning of this operation should go back to that date. But this is wind, not whirlwind. See, I told you that my subject is wind versus whirlwind. Wind is war. Russell tells you that. There's no problem about that. All the symbols that you're going to hear in your discussion of Revelation and are taken from Brother Russell's interpretation, which are correct and applicable at all times. Wind is war. And that's why he was safe. He had said that if nothing happens in 1914, then we know we're out of business, if you want to put it that way. We got to forget the chronology that we so laboriously put together. He was humble enough to admit that if nothing happened, well, we have to start all over again. Well, he wouldn't have the time, would he? But something did happen, didn't it, brother? You better believe it. The wind was loose. And you was the biggest thing you ever heard about, if anybody that's here that remembers any participation in it. The World War. I mean World War. They had wars, rumors of wars a long time back, but this is the first World War on such a scale. So the wind, as Revelation says, was blue. So that's when you get your cue of the setting of Revelation. But everybody's read that and missed carelessly, and they said, well, the winds are held back, so that can't be. No, he says that the wind, singular, should not blow. So we've got that clear, that the wind was loose. Now, wind versus whirlwind means, so the wind reap the whirlwind. So, you know what that means. That's a dynamic principle of living life. If you sow seeds of evil, you reap the judgment of condemnation eventually. That's what's the matter with the Shah, see. You reap a whirlwind. Took him a long time, brother. He did a lot of damage in his day, but nevertheless, he's reaping a whirlwind now, such on such dimensions that no one has conceived possible for to have the whole world up in arms about it. So here it is. The wind blew in 14. The winds were due to accumulate on a scale of a whirlwind eventually, and that's where you are now. Now, let's pursue that. One of the loosing of the four winds, would create a whirlwind, and this, Brother Russell, has correctly, he's correct on both ends. Not, when I say correct, I mean he had the correct concept. He didn't make a specific application because he had to revise his outlook. He always knew that the wind was the war, and he's got that correctly stated in the reprints. He thought that the church would be gone by that time. That's where he was thinking about the ceiling. That will fit in for you. But he thought that the loosing of the winds would eventually affect the fallen angels. Have you heard anything about that lately? Oh, you have? You better have heard something. They're all over the place. They're on your TV. They're in your newspaper. They've got it on. We got it out there right in our territory where they got a house that's for sale. It's called a haunted house. They had the man on the promise. Aren't you afraid? They come through. The whole seance is there. They come through doors that are closed. Seances is nothing new, but to get it on TV and publicize it is something new. Everybody's getting curious. That's dangerous. Curiosity killed the cat or the dog? Which is it? It's going to kill the dog now. Bad. See. So they got the fallen angels on all scales. Now, materialization was the thing. Now, this article, let me give it to you so you can look these things up for yourself. This is 4880 in your reprint. So you can look this up if you want. I'm not going to take too much time delving into it. Yeah, 4880. Judgment of the angels. This is part of their judgment. See, everything is on trial. This is part of their judgment. When they are allowed freedom, it determines whether their minds are in harmony with God still. Some of them may still be, and regretting what they did when they took advantage of their liberties back in the Noachic flood days, or whether they want to go to evil just the same. That's what the judgment is. So this is how they're tested. So there are some of them. Now, materialization has been demonstrated. They do have a case of materialization, but they haven't. He's still been under the chains of darkness. Not able to do it in the day yet. But they've done it at night. They've done all kinds of things. Oh, the FBI and the police department are using what they call, these people, psychics, to find out how to determine where crime has been committed. So it's getting to be a very accepted and popular thing. Now, who knows where it's going to end up? So I'm sure the brethren are aware of this. So there's the indication that your four winds are loosed on the scale that Brother Russell did anticipate with the fallen angels. So you've got to be very, very careful in terms of course, you've got it in the vow. That's what you got it from. You read it. I heard it. And all things, stay away from things that are occult and has anything to do with evil spirits. See? Occultism. That's what it's all about. We had, Brother Russell had books on occultism. Hell and occultism. Spiritism. That was the name title of the book. He had it. So that's what's how necessary he thought it was to warn the brethren back then. So you still have it in the vow. So you know now why it was given out. So the whirlwind in that stage, so you know how much is going on if that is true. That's the final phase of the trouble when the angels are loose. Now, remind me to come back to this, that the ceiling are three, there are three phases of the ceilings. So you remind me to come back to this, somebody, if I don't get into it. Can anybody stop the clock? Where'd I put it? Oh, I'm talking in here. Hiding it won't do it, got to stop it. I ain't got that much time. Anyhow, hurt not the earth, nor the sea, nor the trees, until the servants of God are been sealed. Now, I'll give you briefly insight into the hurting of the earth. We go back to Daniel, and you find you've had it already, so you can briefly elaborate it off yourself. Daniel 7 tells you about the winds on the sea. He says in the 7th chapter, the 2nd verse, Daniel spake and said, I saw in my vision by night, and behold, the four winds. See, that's typical of energetic power from whatever source of the heavens strove upon the great sea. You know, this continent is three quarters sea. Not land, sea. More water than sea, than land. Strove upon the great sea. And the four beasts came up from the sea, diverse one to another. Now then, this driving upon the sea is the indication of the winds being allowed to disturb the sea. Why? Because this is the fallen angels. They have a certain degree of control over the elements. That's why they raised the storm when Jesus was in the sea. So why I was interested and locked into this idea of the Prince of Persia withstood me 21 days, and Gabriel was the one that was talking to Daniel. He had to send Michael to take care of him, and Michael released Gabriel. So this is what's going on behind the scenes. So you see, what you see now going on, which to this Iran situation is also brought to your attention, is the potential power that winds will unleash when the satanic forces begin to get into their midst. It was just a matter of a word. It's your three unclean spirits like frogs, which are the devil. Spirits of the devil. It was just a lie. That's all it was, what they tell me. But look at the damage it did. Set them people afire. And that's how wars are started. You get a lie going, propaganda with all the media facilities, and you can get a war going. So this is the damage that the sea is going to be involved in. They're mob-minded. And of course, everybody. Then you see what the mobs did. They were of the earth, but then they turned anarchistic. These are students, people that are learning education, and they begin to demonstrate. College people, they begin to demonstrate. They begin to parade. We got them on the green there in Guilford, right in our territory. They begin to parade. They wanted to know that the hostages know that we're sympathetic with you. So this can start a chain reaction all across the country, and then the earth even has sea tendencies, and then they're hurt. And then you get the universal spirit of anarchy, and then you get the consummation. All right, now the sealing. I got to go. How much time I got? Now, the sealing, which is a good point to bring you to focus. There are three aspects of the sealing, because everybody said, well, now all this is not supposed to happen, because it says hold them back until the sealing is complete. Now, this is where Brother Russell was correct. The sealing work was done under Brother Russell's supervision. Therefore, it was completed as far as the mechanics was concerned when he died. That's the reason for Article 5950, Harvest going grandly on. He got everything straightened out about the door not being closed, about the elect still being here. You've heard all kinds of discussions about the harvest. You can pick your choice which you like to adopt. But Russell cleared himself on this matter. That means the sealing was done. He left the truth intact. See? Intact. Not that it was all completely corrected, because he said there were certain things that he didn't know. They asked, when are you going to write the 7th volume? Oh, no. He said, somebody else can do that. What about Revelation? Somebody else can do that. So he didn't pretend to be able to give the church all the information, because the Lord was going to do that. But all that they needed for sealing work has been done. You've got your volume, you've got your reprints, you've got your volume, you've got your tabernacle, you got all you need for sealing. So it's true. Hold back the winds that the wind should not blow, for the sealing of the saints in the forehead is the key to that being held back. So that's why the wind was allowed to blow. It didn't even hit here. It was so tight. It didn't hit here till 17, wasn't it? That the war came here in this country. And was short-lived after that. Now, that's one aspect of sealing. The next aspect of the sealing, that's the sealing in the forehead. That was the intellectual knowledge that you needed. And that's very vital, because you ran out of that equipment, and many of the younger ones who didn't have access to reprints or volumes would have been stranded by this time had not the Lord arranged for those things to be reprinted. That's what I mean, reprints, reprinted. Some have the original tower, but that's not reprint. Reprints mean that they were done over again. The plates for the volumes were taken off the scene by the watchdog, so they had to make new plates. So the Lord did a lot of things. He didn't have any hymn books. Yeah, here they are. They had to get some all that done over. So you've had special work there so that the ceiling wouldn't be stopped. But it's the same material that Brother Russell used. You haven't changed your hymns. Brother told you that. You're using the same hymns. But so you're still getting sealed on that basis. All right, now the second aspect of the ceiling is the character development. That's what you needed the test for. And the siftings and divisions that followed in the transition period manifested that there were some who were lacking in that area, so they fell away. So that's another interregnum period from 16 to the present time. That's a little over, that's 60 years. I'm going to say a little over 40 years. Time is going by faster than that, 60 years. But nobody knew it was going to last that long. Now your third aspect of the ceiling, which we're bringing to you to the finale, which is when this great whirlwind feature of the fallen angel comes in, is crystallization. Not just character development, but crystallization and takeoff, evacuation. This is where you are now. Prepare to meet thy God. At this point, you have to be ready with crystallized character. You have had to arrive at the mark in order to be ready. That's the fourth quarter mark. At that time, it wouldn't make any difference whether the four winds were loose or not. It wouldn't make any difference if the whirlwind stayed. The four winds have been loose. But if the whirlwind aspect involving the fallen angels took over, it wouldn't affect you. Because the effect will be to create so much trouble and havoc in the world that, as Brother Russell even suggested, it could be that we might be taken away under those circumstances. But you are now in the whirlwind stage. But the whirlwind that affects you is the divine aspect of the trials and testings and purifications that take you up. That's the whirlwind in which Elijah is taken up. It's not anarchy. It's not church federation or image receiving life or anything of the kind. Elijah has been going up on the whirlwind condition because of the severe trials, testing, siftings, heart-rending experiences of separations from friends. He that loveth father, mother, sister, brothers more than me cannot be my disciple. Those are the experiences that Elijah's been going through, and that's what caused him to be taken up, because they build up his character. If you haven't had any trials, stop, look, and go back. Find out why. Never mind listening. Just go back and find, why didn't you get some trials? So that's the whirlwind feature of Elijah's being taken. But it happened to run in conjunction with the world's whirlwind feature of trouble, fire, and anarchy. But Elijah's whirlwind is from the north. That's Ezekiel. I'll give you that when we come back next year. That's Ezekiel's whirlwind. And so now the end result of this is, this is what the end ceiling results into. He says, and it goes on in the Revelation 7, he says, I heard the number of them that were sealed. 12,000 out of the tribes. And he goes down and lists them. Tribe of Zebulun, he lists 12,000. Simeon, 12,000. Levi, 12,000. Issachar, 12,000. And so forth. I just mentioned that to let you know that we're in the picture, all of us. See, if Levi could get away with it, you can too. We're all in this final ceiling. That's the point. Now then, he tells us in the 14th chapter that I heard the number 144,000 who were sealed, names were in their forehead. That means that they had the character likeness of Christ. Now, the reason he says it, and they were playing on harps and they were singing, I told you that, we're all in that picture. The reason he sees them as a group completed is because they all have the character likeness of Christ, whether they're there or here. That's where we participate in. So that ceiling is well on its way. But the final ceiling, even over and beyond this composite picture of the 144,000 on the mountain, I took you up there, because whether you're here or there, you can be up there just the same. The final scene is in Revelation, and I close with that, 21. I had it marked here. Let's see, 22. Or is it? Just a minute, I had it marked here. I don't know what I did with it. Yeah, here it is. The River of Life. I got it. Yeah, Pure River of Life. Show me Pure River of Life. Someone that finds it, let me know. It's in that chapter. Huh? Yeah, I got that, but I want they see his face. I didn't mark that, which I should have. Where's that?
Four.
Four? Yeah, that's it. Thank you. I should have underlined that. 22. See, that's way at the end now. And they shall see his face, beloved, and his name shall be in their foreheads. That's the end picture. You never thought of the ceiling on that level. We have the hymn, face to face. Maybe you want to close with that. When you see that, beloved, that's the ceiling. That's the name in the forehead. They shall see his face. And then they respond. He sees his name in their foreheads. His name shall be in their foreheads. Not that he sees it. His name shall be. It's not a matter of seeing anymore. It's because it's there. They are the epitome of the image and likeness of God's own character and Jesus' own destiny. That's what it is. So it's, you know, glory meets glory. We beholding thy glory in the mirror are changed into the same likeness as we behold it. And when you have succeeded, then you see him face to face, and then his name is written for. Oh, and why does it say forehead? It's not because the forehead is the only place, but because that's the prominent place of identification of where you belong. This does not apply to the Greek company. See, they don't have that type of a name identification that reflects the Father's image. Well, they'll have love, but they won't have the Father's character, image, and essence. But those who had their names sealed, had the names on their foreheads, will see him face to face, and his name will be written all over their beings. And that's the final glorious outcome of the divine objectives in the calling of the saints of the elect 144,000. May the Lord add his blessings.
Thank you, Brother Levi, for that talk on the wind versus
whirlwind.
Brother Levi mentioned that there wasn't much time left. I'm going to tell you we don't have any. We're out and we're over time. So if you brethren would please arise, we'll ask Brother Levi to close us with a word of prayer.
Father, God, and Savior, Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, Savior of the world, one who provided the Redeemer, to be sure, through whose merit we are permitted also to join in that title as Saviors on Mount Zion. We're so thankful to be identified with thee, to have thy name in our foreheads, that we have thy likeness, thy character crystallized in our development, that we're striving to be more and more in the likeness of thy divine essence, which is love, and of course the other attributes going along with it, wisdom, power, and justice, the foundation of thy throne. And so to this end, we thank thee for the grace whereby thou hast caused us to be found worthy of all of this special investment of discipline, experiences, leading, guidance, and counsel to make us to come off more than conquerors, worthy to stand in thy presence and eventually to see thy face. Bless each one present, that they may be in that group who will join on the procession on the other side of the veil in the grand assembly of the Church of the Firstborn. We ask these favors and blessings in Jesus' name. Amen.